Time to get busy.
Like we always do about this time.
Jonathan Hood.
Outside!
On ESPN 1000.
A lot of this is behind the scenes or under the hood.
He was going the right way! Cohen, all the way! Touchdown, Chicago!
There won't be some Rams renaissance with this Bears team. That's just not happening. Even with Mitch Trubisky, you may have the jersey, but you don't know what that guy really is.
To market it, to answer. Come on.
Oh, bang, bang, bang. Sriracha.
Joseph Sikora.
I think I saw you in a commercial with Michael Jordan. Were you with Jordan?
With Michael Jordan, yeah.
What was your line in that commercial?
It is Michael Jordan.
That's all you had.
It's time to just look under the hood. No stone should be unturned.
I don't even know what that means.
A Louisiana couple is accused of attempting to rob an Uber driver
under the hood
that the woman distracted by being topless.
With Jonathan Hood.
I got an engine underneath my hood.
Oh, it's a topless woman. Oh, I'm totally distracted now.
Weeknights on ESPN 1000.
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Hope you're having a great Monday night. Kicking it with you here until 10 o'clock with open phone lines at 312-332-ESPN. 332-3776 is our phone number. On the monitors here at our first Midwest Bank Studios. We're watching Duke and Syracuse. And Zion Williamson is having a heck of a game for Duke. And I was just telling Eric and Sean, I said, we have to cherish these one-and-dones because once they go to these one-and-done, go to the Cavaliers or the Suns or the Bulls, they won't have special nights like this, at least not in their first and second years because they're too busy losing. It's too bad, too, because Zion Williamson looks like the real deal. Barrett looks like the real deal. But who knows when you're on a bad team? Unless you are a special player, we're going to find out those guys are special. Don't worry, Bulls fans, we'll have draft guys coming up this month. We'll be talking about the NBA draft here in a couple weeks. Let's get through the Super Bowl, and then we'll start going into the NBA draft because I know you want to know who's going to be next, who's the next failure for the Chicago Bulls. So we'll get you that coming up in a couple weeks. We'll hear from Jim Margulis from the Sox Machine coming up in a little bit. Covers the White Sox. So if you're a Sox fan or know of one, tell them to get to their listening device. Eric, I know you know Sox fans. Text them. Tell them we're talking
the Chicago White Sox. How about that?
And you can start, turn up the old cassette machine. Hey, he's talking Sox. So we'll have that coming up for you in 5 minutes. Right here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. So start, Davis, I know on the south side and the west side there, the places where they clean their shoes and boots over there. Tell them I'm going to be talking about some White Sox. So just go over there and text them. Sox conversation coming up in a little bit. So we have to do this regionally. So you have to understand. We have to go into the nooks and crannies.
To go ward by ward.
We have to go ward by ward indeed. Tell the I'll call some
it's
people.
Campaign season.
Yes, I'll text some people while I'm talking here at in the back of the yards and tell them that I'm talking Sacks. So we'll get that as well. I'm wondering this as we get ready to talk to Jim. I want to just say this about the NFL playoffs. Why is it? And we'll talk more about this in weeks to come here as we get closer to the Super Bowl. But why is it that we always want to turn a blind eye to greatness? Why is it? Why are we so quick in 2019 to turn the page if something's great? I don't understand the talk shows, and I'm listening to talk shows just like you do, whether it's television or radio. It is my profession, yes, but I'm a fan just like you are. So I'm listening to the thing, probably some of the same things that you're listening to when it comes to sports talk radio and television. I just don't understand why, from an opinion standpoint, why the opinion makers want to be able to be first when it comes to the demise of something great. There is always this, and it's still this way today on social media. It used to be like this in the newspapers, where people want to be first to a story, right? I got to be first, because if I'm first, that means that I'll get more clicks, or back in the newspaper days, people will buy more newspapers because I got the story first and I got the exclusive. And it's the same thing for hot takers as well. Hot takers want to be first to tell you that Tom Brady and the Patriots are done. Why? Why would you do that? I think that I can, and this is why, let me bring in CM Punk here.
Oops, I'm breaking the fourth wall.
This is why I'll never be in that hot take realm in our business. And maybe that keeps me on the outside. It makes me old school or whatever. I'll just never be that guy to be able to just bloviate on things and throw it into the atmosphere just because. You know what I think? I think Tom Brady's done. Here's why I think Tom Brady's done, because he's been doing it for a long time. And the end must come. You'll never hear me do that, because it doesn't make sense. The Patriots beat the Chargers 41-28. You know why that was? Because, number one, the Chargers had to travel again from the West Coast to the East Coast. Number two, the Patriots are dominant at home in Foxborough. Number three, Tom Brady is the best that I've ever seen. You're listening to someone that watched Elway and Montana in their prime. I know what greatness looks like, and I see Tom Brady, the consistency for someone to be that age, for him to be 34 for 44, good for 343 yards, and a 41-28 victory for the Patriots. It may not look great. It doesn't really matter, though, because they're going to find a way to win. You can say the end for Brady happens when you see it. Why is it that we have to just jump in and be like, right now, Tom Brady's done. And here's why Tom Brady's done. Because the Chargers are good, and it's Phillip Rivers' time. What? What do you mean? It's the greatest of all time. We'll know when he's bad. We know when the time is up. We'll know that. And so even Tom Brady talked about how there are so many people that were against them. And I guess they might have used that for fodder in that locker room to try to keep them motivated. But Tom Brady was talking about that as well, talking about how, hey, you know what? We're still in this thing. What am I missing here? Is it on the screen? Brady talking to Tracy Wolfson.
Your eighth straight AFC championship game, and it's a rematch against Kansas City. This time, though, in Arrowhead. What can we expect from that one?
It'll be a good game. They're a good team. And we played them earlier this year. I know everyone thinks we suck and, can't win any games. So we'll see.
I mean, I don't think everybody feels that way. But for those that have these high profile jobs that want a hot take, that's not keeping your job. You know what keeps your job is to be able to just look at a game for what it is, look at a team for what it is, and just comment on it from that standpoint. How would I be starting the season and be like, you know what? Tom Brady's done and the Bears are going to the Super Bowl. What? You're listening to ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app, Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. So glad that you're with us here as we talk about the Chicago White Sox. You know, the White Sox are in the mix for Manny Machado. We turn to a man who covers the White Sox for Sox Machine. Check out the podcast wherever you download your podcast, Sox Machine. Jim Margulis joins me, Jonathan Hood, here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Jim, as always, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Jim, what does the White Sox lineup look like if the Sox get Machado?
It looks pretty good. A lot better than last year when you consider the upgrade. It moves Yolmer Sanchez to a utility spot. Improves the defense the left side, gives Rick Renteria more options in the middle infield. I think when it comes to the overall shape of the lineup, I think maybe Yoan Moncada maybe has more to do with it than anything else. Obviously Machado is a big upgrade on, the other guys they've had in the middle of the order, like, Avi Garcia last year. But really, I think when it comes to shaping the lineup, Machado is one big piece and Moncada is the other.
Were you surprised that the Sox were circling around Machado and Harper in the winter meetings?
I wasn't. I think I would have been distressed if they didn't, just because this is kind of what the rebuild is all about. You're clearing bad contracts, trying to trade as many veterans as possible before they turn into declining assets, leaving a clean payroll so that you can capitalize on a big position and a big opportunity. And when it comes to third base especially, I mean, outfield, the White Sox have a lot of interesting prospects in the outfield, whether it's Mike Rodolfo or Luis Basabe or Luis Gonzalez, Luis Roberts, so many Luises. When it comes to the infield, especially third base, Jake Berger having those two injuries really made the third base picture just look pretty awful internally. So when it comes to Machado, he's pretty much the perfect free agent to sign without blocking anybody, without worrying about trying to rush a guy up the ladder or draft for need. He basically takes care of the position for you hope at least 5 great years, and then whatever happens after that is the consequence of aging and injuries and things he can't control. But this would be the perfect opportunity. And if they somehow sat out and said, we're not interested in spending yet because we're not going to project to win 85 games yet, that would have been really disappointing.
Jim Margulis from Sox Machine with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. You can follow Jim on Twitter at Sox Machine. So if Machado signs with the White Sox, he'd be the best third baseman since Robin, right?
I would say he's better. I don't think Ventura was really on a Hall of Fame track at any point just because he was a college player who started at an older age. Maybe Ventura in his prime, before the ankle injury, maybe Ventura's best season matchup with Machado's overall talent, but really could be the best third baseman they've ever had. But I think a very good Robin Ventura year is at least the White Sox haven't had that in a long time.
Well, ever is huge. That means, yeah. I mean, think about it. Now, again, people over the years thinking about the White Sox, Robin probably is the best in my lifetime, but if Machado can exceed that, Mr. Grand Slam home run, Robin Ventura, then that's pretty special.
Yeah, no, it's, and really third base has been a sore spot for the franchise since probably Buck Weaver was kicked out of baseball. guys that they've had, like Bill Melton, he had a promising start. He fell off a ladder, hurt his back. Pete Ward was another guy in the 60s who was one of their better power hitters. And then he got in a car accident, hurt his neck. We know what happened with Joe Creedy's back. So Ventura's ankle, it seems like any time they've had a third baseman who you think is going to lock down the position for 5 to 10 years, something terrible happens. So I think that's really my only reservation with signing Machado is that third base for the White Sox is quicksand and everybody's doomed. But aside from that, I'll take Machado.
All right, so, Jim, I know you've seen the over-unders that came out for Major League Baseball. I think the Sox were at 74. Is that how much over are they if Machado signs?
I would say with Machado, they're maybe 77. I would feel good about that number. I think they're really short on pitching still. They're counting, I think, on Reynaldo Lopez to hold his gains. They're counting on Lucas Giolito to not have a 6-something ERA, to make major strides there. Ivan Nova is okay, but he's not really, a guy who eats innings the way Shields did. He provides a better quality of inning, but fewer of them. So it seems like there's still a starter short. Missing Michael Kopech, I think, really hurts when it comes to them exceeding win totals and surprising everybody a year earlier than anticipated. So I would say with Machado, they're high 70s. But, I think with the way the free agent market is taking so slow to unfurl that, maybe if they get Machado and they feel frisky, they can add a starter.
We saw earlier that Avisail Garcia signed with the Tampa Rays. What are your What are your memories of Avisail? What did you think of him as a Sox?
It was frustrating, but I think when it comes to his talent, when he was acquired, he was a very divisive prospect. People saw the immense physical talent he had, and we saw that too. The power when he got a hold of one was massive. The speed was surprising. He eventually had a good year defensively in the outfield. But, all the things that, we saw play out were the skeptics called. The lack of fly ball power, especially to the pole field, the lack of plate discipline, it never quite came together. So I think when you look at, Garcia's career, I think the injuries were something nobody anticipated or you can't really predict specifically. But when it comes to his overall skill set, probably a median outcome. He could have, been a major disappointment, never really stuck in the majors. He could have been a multiple-time All-Star. in the end, he made one All-Star game. Otherwise, was kind of just replacement level, and that's probably, you know, given how diverse and wide the opinions were on him, I think that's probably, you know, something like a median outcome for him.
I like the idea that the Sox saved money by, you know, getting rid of the contracts. No more Avi Garcia, no more Matt Davidson to try to line up others like a Manny Machado. What are your thoughts on the other ancillary moves, which could be important, by the way, for this Machado move with Alonso and John Jay signing with the White Sox?
Yeah, it's really weird. I'm not really a fan of the Alonso acquisition. I think he's better, you know, given his plate discipline is better than Daniel Paul, because I think he provides a higher floor for that DH spot, for that backup first base spot. But, you know, some of his underlying numbers and you know, how he hit 23 homers but only 19 doubles. He's never had 50 extra base hits in a season. I'm not really buying, you know, the kind of DH production from him. So I think when it comes to him and John Jay is, I think, given his defense, given that the White Sox didn't have a good defensive corner outfielder in the majors and they provide some plate discipline, you know, he provides some skills, and $4 million is not a bad use for him. But really, when it comes to, you know, just these talents and how they have kind of low ceilings but also maybe higher floors, they don't really do anything to change the picture. So I think, you know, they're in an awkward spot to where if the White Sox somehow didn't land Machado, you just have these kind of remnants of the Machado chase and how it didn't work out. And I think they would just kind of stick with them, and it would be somewhat of an anticlimactic or, you know, just a weird White Sox existence for a year. But I think if Machado, you know, hangs around and they stick and he's happy and everybody's happy, I think those moves will explain themselves. So when it comes to their, you know, those two players, Machado basically settles it. The bullpen additions, I like, you know, Colome and Herrera. I think they needed those kind of proven right-handed arms to allow guys like Ian Hamilton, Zach Birdie, and so forth room to develop without collapsing in save situations.
You know, we're going to look back at the John Jay years fondly after we win a few championships with these kids. You know that, Jim.
Oh, yeah.
We'll look back.
Yep. Well, based on what the Cubs said about him and what the Cardinals have said about him, he has that kind of, you know, I guess, sneaky big presence in the clubhouse. So, you know, he might only last a year, but, you know, if this rebuild sticks, you might hear somebody like Eloy Jimenez or Basabe or whoever comes up saying, you know, I learned a lot from John Jay.
Right, exactly. Jim Margulis from Sox Machine with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Your thoughts about Abreu, too. You and I have talked about Abreu before. I want him to stay with the franchise as a stabilizer, and I'm glad that they were able to ink a, you know, a short-term deal. Do you see him being with the White Sox in 2020?
I can see it. I think maybe, you know, Yonder Alonso is kind of a weird – you know, he's a bit of a security blanket because the White Sox can, you know, extend his contract or pick up an option for 2020. And, you know, maybe he's there as some insurance in case Abreu gets hurt or, you know, for some reason does not look like a, you know, a great investment going forward. But, you know, he's been through so much and he's been the consummate professional. And last year got off to a slow start, but was back to his form before all those, the groin injuries and ingrown hair, just the weird, you know, confluence of intimate injuries, you know, befell him, and he didn't quite get to his old numbers. But I like the way he was hitting, like, say, you know, late June through August, and that looked like his old self. So I think if, you know, he can pick up where he left off, there's room for him. And based on the way the free agent markets, and especially for guys over 30, take so long to come together, I don't think there's any rush to extend him, and they can wait to see how it plays out, and I think there's enough goodwill built between them to have a good, honest negotiation even at a later date. So I think this year is going to be crucial for him in terms of reestablishing his 3,100 credentials and being a part of a team for a couple more years.
How soon do you think we'll see Eloy? Is it April 15th? Is May 1st? What do you think?
I would say, like, maybe the third or fourth week of April. I think when it comes to the day after, I think it looks a little bit sketchy, and especially since the minor league season starts later than the major league season. I can see them wanting to get, you know, 3 good weeks and avoiding, you know, hoping maybe some kind of injury pops up or some kind of roster situation arises to where they can say, you know, we're calling them up because we need them, not because it's some arbitrary cutoff date that allows us to save some money. So they might be looking for an out like that. But, yeah, I would guess something like April 20th something is maybe the time where they call him up and everybody puts all the service time stuff behind them.
Jim, I'm going to tell you this. I, as a White Sox fan all my life, I'm looking forward to this ball club. You see that the future is bright. I just need to know if the White Sox are on the same page with me in that once they do turn the corner, that they will be looking at a new manager. Because I don't think there's any there's no way that the manager in place right now can be able to lead these young guys. Because here's the thing. If I wanted Ned Yost to manage the White Sox, I'd go get him a uniform. I think that Rick is a nice guy, nice A to B manager. But I mean, just similar to the Cubs or other teams that when they're ready to turn the corner, they find the right manager to manage the right mix. I don't think Rick's that guy. Is there anything that stood out about Rick last year in that those 62 wins that you liked?
Well, I think when it comes to a rebuild, and the teams tend to get rid of the first manager who's part of that rebuild and part of the teardown. You know, last year I think showed why that happens. You know, Renteria is in a tough spot where he has to hold the team accountable and try to get wins out of roster that the front office is basically not providing him. You know, the front office and manager are working at two ends, and you know, it's tough. And you get situations like all those pitching changes. He was a lot more hyperactive with the bullpen last year than he was in his first season when he had credible veterans like Robertson and Swarzak and Dan Jennings and so forth. So, you know, the bullpen, I think I kind of toss out and hope that this year it resembles more like his first season with the Sox, where he has like a set 7-8-9 type setup going into the late innings. When it comes to the benchings, that kind of worries me just because I think that kind of stuff can wear thin. And it's not necessarily his fault. I understand where it's coming from, but when you're just trying to kind of crack the whip on a team that's just not doing it, that just gets old, you know, that. And it's weird because you don't want to be a pushover and not enforce things, but you can't, you can't get wins where there are none. So I think that can wear through. I think, you know, we're going to see probably this year. I would say it's going to be either a change where he does soften up a little bit, some of these, you know, not non-hustle things, or maybe address in the dugout, but they stay in the game. Or maybe it wears thin and you hear players grumbling and something needs to be done. But I would kind of throw last year out in terms of just a 100-loss season, the White Sox being as bad as they looked, having, you know, really ragged pitching staff at times, having an empty lineup at times. And it's tough for a manager, and a lot of them don't make it. And the White Sox, I think, are hell-bent on him making it because they extended him without telling anybody. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think that, I'm not counting on him going anywhere. But I think this year could either be a softening or maybe a little bit of a blow up.
All right. So you agree with me, Joe Girardi will be managing in 2020.
I'd love to see that. I was a big fan of Francona when he was available to pick Ventura.
Yeah.
I do like the idea of Girardi, but Renteria's around. It's tough. And the White Sox and Jerry Reinsdorf teams in particular just like staying with managers and people above him longer than they're warranted. Right now, I'm not giving up on him. I think he had a tough spot last year, and this year I think will be kind of where I make up my mind on him.
All I'm saying is that when a Lloyd comes up, I don't want the Sox to be playing small ball like we saw at times last year. I mean, when you get the kids up there, let them start swinging, show them what they can do. See, here's the thing. If small ball was permeated throughout the White Sox system, if Grudzielanek was showing them and others were showing them throughout the system, I'd get it. But if you're just doing it because you think that's right, I don't think that's White Sox baseball. I don't think that's how you define it. And I think another manager could have defined that clearer than Rick can, but we'll see.
Yeah. And I think Machado is just, given his, the quote that he had about not hustling when it's not warranted, and he tried to walk it back, but he's so talented that you don't want to see him get caught up in that kind of stuff, because the White Sox need talented players, and they should be able to look past that. And if Machado comes along and plays like he did in Baltimore, it'll be forgiven, and maybe there will be some easing up just because Renteria sees he has talent again and kind of can relax a little. That's my hope.
If I went to Sox Machine, what would I find, Jim?
You would find breathless coverage of the Manny Machado rumors, a lot of that going on right now. The podcast is kicking back up into gear. And then turning the corner, getting into Sox Fest. And I think Machado will be the kind of player who makes or breaks Sox Fest, because if he's not there, A lot of the novelty from last year where everybody was excited about Renteria and Moncada and Giolito and all that's a little bit diminished. So I think he's the player and or one of these signings will be the thing to generate excitement. And I think the White Sox would love to have this resolved by then.
My friend, as always, I appreciate it. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Oh, my pleasure.
Jim Margulis from Sox Machine with us here on the Under the Hood show here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Tales from the Hood is next.
You're listening to Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
What do you got there?
This is your car.
My car? I said a 10-second car, not a 10-minute car.
Pop the hood.
Pop the hood?
Pop the hood.
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Here we go.
Tales from the Hood is brought to you by Northwestern Basketball at the new Welsh Ryan Arena this Sunday when they host Illinois. Buy tickets now at NUSports.com, NUSports.com. Tales from the Hood, stories of sports, entertainment, everything else in between. We'll hear from Shanola Hampton from the hit TV show Shameless. Arguably the best television show I've seen based out of Chicago. You put that on a poll one day. So that's it's an arguable point. Of course, it's against three other Chicago-based shows on NBC on Wednesday nights. So it's a ton of those. But interesting. So we'll hear from her. Jeff Dickerson on the Bears coming up in an hour from now. We'll get his thoughts about the press conference that took place today with the brain trust for the Chicago Bears with Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace. I have to remind you about the Under the Hood podcast. If you are a third shifter, say you're getting ready for work now, but you missed some of the show, that's why we have the Under the Hood podcast, you see. The Under the Hood podcast, you can download it into your device, whether it is iTunes, Apple Music, whether it's SoundCloud, a TuneIn app, iHeartRadio. Wherever you find your podcast, just download the Under the Hood podcast. And as I told Eric a couple weeks ago, even if just do a Google or Bing search, even a Bing search, if you just put in UTH pod, U as in under, T as in the hood, H, that way you could find the Under the Hood podcast. So that's all, another way to do it.
If you show up on Bing, that means you get some real content out there.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and it shows up on Bing. So there's your sign.
Did you just check it on Bing?
I did. I was curious because I haven't Binged anything in a minute.
Yes.
I'm going to ask Jeeves next.
Pardon the expression. You haven't Binged anything in a minute.
Thank you, Pastor. That's what the hood stories of sports, entertainment, everything else in between. Now it's time to take a look at the stories. Here's Eric Ostrowski. Eric?
Kansas City man gets tickets for helping Chief. A random act of kindness has netted AFC Championship tickets for a man called Dave, who helped dig a Kansas City Chief out of the snow. Offensive lineman Jeff Allen, on his way to the game on, was it, they played Saturday. Mm-hmm. On the way to the game Saturday, his car got stuck in the snow in the ditch. On the way to Arrowhead, Allen said on Twitter that a nice guy named Dave took him and dug him out of the road and got him able to get to the game on time. So he went on Twitter to try to find who this Dave was. He just put out there, is there a good, nice guy named Dave who helped me dig out in the snow today? I got tickets for them. Hundreds and hundreds of people replied saying, hey, I'm Dave. I'm from Kansas City. Sunday evening, Allen tweeted out that he found the real Dave, despite the recent influx of people changing their name to Dave in the KC area. LOL. Gave him a couple AFC Championship tickets for help digging the man out of the hole.
For an expression.
Yes.
That's, you know what? That's kind of cool.
That's
I like
lucky.
That.
Like, you just stop and help. You're just stopping someone on the side of the road, and next thing you know, it's an offensive lineman, and you get tickets to a game.
See?
Done.
People care. Even in 2019, people are good Samaritans, are they not?
They are.
See?
I agree.
Even in 2019. A woman banned from Walmart after riding cart while drinking wine from Pringles can. Woman banned from Walmart after riding cart while drinking wine from a Pringles can. I think I should just stop right there.
That's all that needs to be said.
Why? I think we could just roll credits now. I think I should just go to break.
Oh my God.
I want you to just think about what I just told you. Wichita Falls, Kansas. Police were called to a Texas Walmart after a woman was reportedly drinking wine from a Pringles can and riding an electric cart in the parking lot. Officers responded to a call around 9 a.m. about a suspicious person in the store's parking lot, the Times Record News reported. Investigators found the woman at a nearby restaurant and told her that she was banned from the Walmart after she was riding around the store's parking lot around 6:30 drinking wine from a potato chip can. Okay, so here's the question. Serious question, right? So which wine would taste good in a Pringles can, and which flavored Pringles? If you put wine into like the salt and vinegar, how does that work?
Man, that salt and vinegar is going to dominate the wine.
Okay, what about the barbecue, which is not really barbecue? But
no, it's not really. I mean, that might have a nice, if you like swirl it and spin it, it might have a nice little aroma, like some winos would say.
The original is not quite the original, just a little salty.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that taste with wine? Because all of it's going to be salty, but nothing stronger than the, by the way, look that up. Look at the different flavors of Pringles, because I'm just saying three.
It would have to be something with cheese in it, right? Because cheese goes perfectly with wine.
Solid.
See?
Solid rationale.
Dun, dun, dun. I just think that's just bizarre. Just...
It's so weird. Like, I always thought, like, back in the day, drinking wine out of the bag, out of the box was bad, but this gal is just drinking it right out of it. So we got originally salted, honey mustard, cheddar and sour cream.
There you go.
Fire roasted jalapeno, smoky cheddar, tangy barbecue, loaded baked potato, Memphis barbecue, dill pickle. I don't know about that. That might be a good chaser. Not for wine, maybe.
No.
Jalapeno, Nashville hot chicken, salt and vinegar.
Nashville, you can't say this about Nashville hot chicken. Anything is awful.
Yes, it is.
Awful.
Especially is it? Let me stop. I was about to name a restaurant, but I'm not going
to
do that.
We're just trying to keep our jobs.
I've never had the actual Nashville hot chicken, though. I've always wanted to go get it, and I've never gotten it.
Don't do it. Brutal.
None of us have ever had it in Nashville, have we?
No.
Where it originated. So maybe?
No.
In Nashville?
I was in Nashville with the Flames. I passed on that. I passed on that. It's on our way to Troy, Alabama. So I passed on that. Man pleads guilty after alligator threat. I still need to find out which is the best one.
I think the cheese. I'm going to go with one of the smoked cheeses. I just like the rationale.
Which wine was it? Was it red, white?
It doesn't matter. When you're a wino, it doesn't matter.
Another thing was it was 6:30 in the morning when she got caught driving that thing around drinking wine.
A man who police say placed a 3-foot alligator on top of another man in Connecticut as part of an extortion attempt has pleaded guilty to reduce charges. So the Connecticut Post reports that 30-year-old Isaiah Garcia of Garland, Texas, entered his plea Thursday to unlawful restraint. Garcia originally faced kidnapping, assault, and larceny charges in what police said was one of the strangest cases they investigated. So authorities say a 21-year-old man called his aunt in April to say that he had been kidnapped by his abductor and was demanding $800. Police said that she received a photograph of him face down in a bathtub with an open mouth alligator on top of him.
I'm pissed that the person that kidnaps me thinks my life is only worth $800. Like, come on, man.
I mean, he faces up to 1 year in prison during his sentencing on March 15th. I mean, of course, authorities later arrested Garcia at the Shelton Hotel. The point is that, I mean, he pleads guilty after an alligator threat. $800. You know something's wrong. Something fishy's about that, right?
That's a new one. I like that. Like, imagine walking into a bank with the gator. Be like, all the money, open the vault.
Oh, gosh. All right, where am I here with this story here? And do I have in front of me, Eric, the story of... What story are we looking for here? There's one that I want to get to today. You have it? Okay. So it's a story of that was just bizarre. Play that. Play the news clip from San Francisco.
Police in Utah say a teen driver crashed her car because she was doing the Bird Box Challenge behind the wheel. Officers tweeted these photos. Take a look with the caption, Bird Box Challenge while driving, predictable result. Fortunately, she was not hurt. Earlier this month, Netflix warned people not to hurt themselves while doing the Bird Box Challenge, which was inspired, of course, by a Netflix movie. In that movie, remember, a mother and her kids wear blindfolds to protect themselves from a sinister force that makes anyone who sees it suicidal. I cannot believe this is still even a thing, Chelsea. But
yes, it was. And that was from CBS News San Francisco. So, the Bird Box Challenge. I just happened to watch that that movie. Did any
you watched it?
No, not interested.
Okay. So I watched it because it was just on Netflix. It was just you couldn't avoid it. You put it on Netflix and it's like, there it is.
I know. And right at the top of the screen every time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I watched it during the holidays. I did not have a problem with it. It's very few movies where I'm just like, this is trash. I can't believe I watched this, all that. I didn't think it was great. I didn't think it was awful either. But clearly, there is this resistance to the movie, one. But two, it's become like this cult-like type of movie because, you know, the movie pretty much is that the mom and the children are riding around on a boat blindfolded because if they show their eyes, they'll be captured.
Yeah, by whatever the thing is attacking the world.
Yeah, I don't want to give that all away. But, I mean, I think you should watch it for yourself to find out if it's something interesting to you. I saw it and just like... My whole issue is that Lil Rel wasn't on there long enough.
Right. I've heard that. I heard he was pretty funny.
He was fine.
For the brief cameo.
He was fine, but I mean, I think he could have been. It's the typical black guy that's on a show and he's off first. He dies first.
He did get off pretty quick. He did. so, you know, right there.
So the typical black guy is the funniest guy on the show and he's off first. I mean, this is an issue over the years that we need to address. But that's exactly what happened. I don't know. I didn't think that was that bad. But this whole thing where people are just throwing up on it, like, oh, it's terrible. I don't think it was terrible, but I think it's also stupid to have a Bird Box Challenge of I'm going to drive and not be able to put a blindfold over me and see how far I can go.
It's dumb as hell. What is dumber, the Bird Box Challenge while driving or the Tide Pod Challenge of these idiot kids eating detergent?
Put that in the poll at ESPN 1000 because both of those things are just ridiculous. Sean Davis, what do you have?
So, I think it's safe to say that Steph Curry is a college legend. You see his jersey walking around downtown Chicago during Lollapalooza every summer.
Yeah.
Jersey should probably be retired. Bob McKillop, his former college coach, they caught up with him out in L.A. at the airport, and they asked him, why has jersey been retired? His answer, I think he's in the process of completing his degree. Now, reporters then followed up and talked to athletic director Chris Clooney, who told him that Steph is indeed still actively working on his degree. Now, it's been 11 years, so this is my question.
Yeah.
Should it be a problem, his jersey being retired? Because, I mean, should that be a requirement? That you have to have a degree for your jersey to be retired?
All depends on the school, sure.
Because, I mean, if that was the case, DePaul might not have any retired jerseys.
Lato doesn't want to hear that.
That's true, though, Jay. I love DePaul.
Is that kind of petty? You think that's petty, guys?
I think it is. Well, no.
It depends on if that's their regular rule. Like, if that's part of their requisite to get up on the rafters is you have to have a degree, then I get it. If it's not and they're just sticking it to them, then yeah.
I mean, it's Davidson. They haven't had anybody else. He is Davidson basketball.
Yeah. But if that's how you run your school, though, and that's what is required, then he should go for it. Get his degree. So you get your number retired.
But that's not the motivation. I mean, if Steph just wanted to finish his degree for himself and for his family and his kids down the line to give them an example, then that's great. But I'm not thinking Steph's motivated like, oh, I want my jersey in the rafters. Let me go take this geometry course over the summer. I just can't see Steph being motivated.
Nope.
Now, it's 11 years later. If he didn't want to get it done.
Well, I'll put it this way.
I know.
If Shaq did it.
Yeah.
I think that's, I mean, if Shaq did it, then definitely.
He's a criminal justice major, right?
Right, Sergeant O'Neill.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. For sure, I know the one thing about that test that Shaq took, there was no verbal on there.
From your hood to J-hood. I excel, then prevail. The mic is contacted, I attract clientele. On ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
The Chicago White Sox.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
Oh, say it again.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000.
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and ESPN app. Eagles almost had it, didn't they? New Orleans wins 20-14. But Alshon Jeffrey.
That was a play I didn't make. I mean, it went through my hands. I mean, he threw me a catchable ball. I got to make that play. That's on me. I'll take that loss. That's on me. Let all my teammates down. City of Philadelphia, that's on me. I'll take that.
Oh.
I'm just being petty.
Well, maybe.
Petticoat Junction.
As Nature Boy Buddy Rogers said after winning the world championship at Old Comiskey Park in the 60s, to a better guy, it could not happen. He actually got the phrase wrong. But that's exactly what I feel about Alshon Jeffrey. To a better guy, it couldn't happen.
It works. It's not the right phrase, but it means the same thing.
Buddy Rogers said, I'm just like, okay, I think I got what he's saying. Anyway, I've got a new play-by-play guy for the Chicago Blackhawks. They're going to need some people over there soon because things aren't working out well. I suggest someone in the booth with Whiteman doing radio, and I think the guy should be Snoop Dogg.
What's happening, fellas?
Hey. Welcome. Hey, welcome, man. To L.A. King Thomas.
Hey, thank y'all for having me, man. Yeah, we had to see these rings right here.
Oh, yeah.
We had a chance.
We'll get a look at that.
We had a chance twice to bring home that cup. And I've drunk out of Stanley before. Say that ain't so.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, sir. That's bling, bling right there. That's my POV. I'll find you.
There we go. Yeah.
I'll find you.
Here we go.
Give me that.
Here we go.
SMD, turn it around. Push it. Run the weave. Come on now.
Yeah. Hands up.
Oh, watch out. Oh, he stole on him. He fired on Cubs. Hold on now. Oh, get it cracking then. Let's go. Snoop Dogg in the house. Let me see some.
Go get him, Dion. Get him, Dion. Move, Dion. Get out the way. Go get him.
Here we go.
Go get him.
Hey, was that Doty?
Oh, yeah.
Doty. That's my dog. Find it. You got the... Oh, come on, nephew.
Good stuff.
Good looking at it. I see y'all Sports Center tonight.
He knew. I'll be on Sports Center. That's tremendous. Snoop likes hockey. And they gave him the mic for the LA Kings game, and I thought it was tremendous. Look out, John Whiteman. There's somebody's going to keep coming after your job. You talk about bringing people under the tent. Snoop definitely is doing that. It's tremendous. Especially during the fights. That's great. Jeff Dickerson on the Bears coming up at 9:35. We're trying to track down Shanola Hampton. Will she come on the show from the hit TV show Shameless? Find out next.
You're listening to my mans and them.
Just some men that's on the mic. And when we rock up on the mic, we rock the mic.
Right? Jay Hood. On ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Oh, jeez.